So we have three more classes before we take a break, and I did want to return to Patanjali, if just for a brief shining moment. Over these last three classes, we'll dig back in more intensely, perhaps in the fall. And then again, we might not. We might move over to something else. We'll see where the Shakti wants us to go. I want to talk a little bit about the sutras that I sent you this week. My plan was that we would chant Patanjali during the open kirtan time of class, but I just wasn't feeling it. So I think how I will appease my impulse to do a bit more intensive practice in class. We'll chant the sutras just for a few minutes after I speak, and we'll glide right from the sutras into slow Om Namah Shivaya, and then we'll glide into silent meditation from there, and then we'll glide into sharing from there, and then we'll glide into a closing chant from there, and then we'll glide out into the thunderstorm. I will read you from First Mukunda, and then Ship, my new best friend. So this is book 2, and it's sutras 40 and 41. This is the English. From purity arises a desire to protect one's body and a cessation of adverse contact with others, which does sound a bit creepy, but we'll talk about that. From purity arises a desire to protect one's body and a cessation of adverse contact with others. This is the niyama shocha. From purity, I should really enunciate that, purity. From purity arises a desire to protect one's body and a cessation of adverse contact with others. And then Sutra 41, he goes on, from the purification of one's essence, cheerfulness arises, and with it one-pointed concentration, mastery of the senses, and the capacity for sustaining the vision of the true self. So we go from purity arises a desire to protect one's body and a cessation of adverse contact with others. That sounds a bit harsh. And then turns into, from purification of one's essence, cheerfulness arises, and with it, one-pointed concentration, mastery of the senses, and the capacity for sustaining the vision of the true self. So in two sutras, we move from a sense of a kind of purifying the body in the most austere way. From purity arises a desire to protect one's body in a cessation of adverse contact. From purification of one's essence, cheerfulness arises, and with it one-pointed concentration, mastery of the senses, and the capacity for sustaining the vision of the true self. So this is Mukunda Stiles' version. And then in Chip Hartraff's version, which is a little bit more precise with the Sanskrit, and therefore a little bit hard to understand. With bodily purification, one's body ceases to be compelling, likewise contact with others. With bodily purification, one's body ceases to be compelling, likewise contact with others. And then again, 41, purification also brings about clarity, happiness, concentration, mastery of the senses, and capacity for self-awareness. Purification also brings about clarity, happiness, concentration, mastery of the senses, and capacity for self-awareness. So these are two very, very interesting sutras. And as I so often harp on, the notion of purity, when we view the notion of purity through a paradigm, we'll call it an understanding, a consciousness paradigm that is about separation, a paradigm of living that is about transcending the body as a way to attain higher and higher states of consciousness. When we're in that realm, purification of the body becomes a very austere practice. And that can be in a yogic system, but it can be in any system that buys into so-called mortification of the flesh. Any system that buys into this body is dirty, I need to get a colonic every other week, I have to eat only the most pure food, I have to think only the most pure thoughts, I have to transcend this body so I can live in a rarefied realm of light or move into a heaven place when I die. Any system that is more about the hereafter, you know, any system that is about denying the reality of the body in the quest for higher and deeper and more spiritual evolution. We'll read especially Sutra 240, as about doing whatever practices are necessary to totally purify the body, removing all sexual energy, removing all desire, making this body not a body. That's a worldview I don't particularly ascribe to. And I haven't seen it work very well. It's a paradigm that seems brilliant for creating very dissociated people who are actually full of rage and suffering, all of which is quite repressed, and then therefore tricks them into acting out, which they have to do behind closed doors, and then there's a lot of shame and even more hiding. And we see this across the board. We've seen it with so many of great spiritual masters of this century. It's staggering. And of course, we see it in the political realm. I needn't name any names. We see it everywhere. So transcending the body never quite really seems to work. And the notion of a kind of austere purification seems to create a lot of secrets and hiding. And a lot of self-loathing, actually. Because there's a lot about the body not to like. It breaks down. It gets old. It hurts. The back goes out. We get a headache. You're trying to meditate and suddenly your foot falls asleep. It gets sick just when you have a big presentation at work. It gets tired. Sometimes it gets insomnia, keeps you up at night. There's a lot about the body not to like. So it's very easy to get seduced into thinking, if I could just purify this body, then all my troubles will go away. But it just doesn't seem to work that way. And so for me, where I am in my own journey right now, and how I read this sutra is a very different kind of purity. It's a purity of thought, it's a purity of being, it's a purity of touching innocence inside of oneself. And in that touching of innocence, our own essential, authentic purity releases. And as we live in that state of touching innocence, we become pure. I've told you the story so many times of myself back in the 70s and early 80s when I was a very austere little yogini. I only wore white. I did a gazillion hours of practice every day. I only ate a very strict vegan type of diet. I didn't have plastic in the house. But what I came to see was that I was separating myself from the world. What I came to see was that even though I led what I thought was a very pure, or the yoga word is sattvic, lifestyle, my mind was filled with judgment because I was judging everybody who didn't live that way. I was filled with so much negativity and judgment. It's amazing there was any space in a room for me and anyone else. I had so much judgment about things like sugar, caffeine. They're so bad. I mustn't taint this pure body with these impure substances. When I first met Muktananda, I was a very strict macrobiotic. And in the Siddha Yoga ashrams, they served Indian food, so it was, everything was spicy and ghee and sugar. I was so shocked. How could they possibly feed this food to us? Little by little, I began to realize I was the one with the problem. Because the truth is, the more we cultivate our own sense of inner innocence and an easygoing, a joyous acceptance of whatever is arising, we find ourselves moving into a very pure and wondrous state. Which doesn't mean we shouldn't exercise self-control and use our willpower appropriately. You don't want to just be a total sloth. You want to develop discrimination. But purity, true purity, is much less about denying oneself, practicing austerity. True purity is actually about living in joy. True purity, again, is actually about touching innocence and wonder inside of oneself and allowing that sense of innocence to infuse every breath. And that's how we begin to touch into the real purity, the real shocha. And that's when the Sutra 41 begins to really break open. And you begin to see, oh, okay, I get this. Because there is a sense of cheerfulness. There is a sense of light. That's what our true nature is. Our true nature is very pure, but it's not a purity that arises from self-denial. It's a purity that arises as the essence of ebullient, amazing, wondrous, delightful life. Which doesn't mean we have to be happy all the time. Which doesn't mean we have to be a goody-two-shoes. True purity allows us to feel the wonder even on a really hard day or in a really challenging moment. Somehow still, as we reach deeper and deeper inside of ourselves, we find the magic well. And purity is one of the waves of water. It's part of one of the ingredients in the water of that internal well. And it's a joyous purity. It's a purity that doesn't even want to ingest or indulge in any kind of action that messes with the equilibrium. You know, the purity that we want to cultivate, in my opinion, on a wisdom path, is the purity that makes us feel so good and happy and alive and at one with ourselves that the impulse to take in that which would harm us is non-functional. It's neutralized. Even more than neutralized. What is it when something is deactivated? That's a good word though, but that's not the one I mean. But it's deactivated. And from that internal spaciousness arises right action. You just don't even want the whatever, the second cookie or the whatever, second glass of wine or, you know, whatever. Those are pathetic examples, but you know what I'm saying. And again, I know I talk about this week after week after week, and I hope it doesn't get boring, but it's like this is the teaching we all need so much. It's so not about trying to become something other than we are out of some notion that who we are and how we are is not okay, and we have to aspire to attain this whatever state. All that does is create longing, right, and desperation, right? And then you're stuck in the kleshas again. You're stuck in the raga dvesha dance, right? The klesha waltz, we should call it. The recipe for suffering. When we allow ourselves to drop down into that, what we call here, that sense of unity, the kleshas lose their hold, and just natural sense of purity of self arises. We lose the desire to act in ways that harm us. It's very, very simple. By cultivating what we truly are, what we truly are not falls away. And what we truly are not are these impure losers. It's just not what we are. And when we beat ourselves up with, you know, I have to earn this and that, and give up this and do more exercise, whatever, sort of whipping oneself that we do, all that does is create an internal environment that's very tight. And we actually unconsciously defend against it. So the whole thing backfires. So this niyama, it's a very interesting one. You know, I've said a couple of weeks ago I was talking about contentment, santosha, and I love that niyama. I think for me personally, practicing contentment is just, it's a practice that I love. Especially when I'm in a situation that is triggering me just like nobody's business. And to reach down into contentment and find contentment, it's so sweet. So sweet. Similarly, with shocha. When we're just feeling so disgusting, you know, you just like, you finish the whole pint of ice cream, or you know, you drank the whole bottle of wine, or you woke up next to someone who you don't even remember climbing into the bed with them, you know, whatever your little thingy is. You know, where you just go shopping and you realize you put on 10 pounds and it's like, oh my God, now what do I do? You know, whatever it is. And so what we tend to do with that is, ugh, you know, I'm just so disgusting and whatever, however you do it, whatever your own version is. That just makes it even more. So to recognize the purity of self within the so-called impurity, it's an act, it's a heroic act. It's a truly heroic act. And when we do that, all the so-called bad stuff gets neutralized. That was the word I was looking for, neutralized. You know, true yogic, what can I call it, attention neutralizes all the so-called bad stuff. You know, we have the greatest model of this in Ramakrishna. I'm sure you've heard me tell the story of his crazy wisdom guru who shows up in his life, and he's very caught up in an austere lifestyle. Very strict vegetarian, celibate, the whole yada, yada, yada. So the first thing she does is make him eat meat that's rotten and full of maggots. Now, I'm not saying I would be able to find the purity in that. And it's so wonderful when you read the accounts of it. He talks about seeing this, you know, and you can imagine how revolting. I mean, you don't have to imagine how it is revolting. But he knew he had to eat it. And as he began to reach into it, suddenly the whole thing exploded and he saw the divine Shakti in that. It's Ramakrishna, you know, he writes in such a, I should bring it in because there's no way I can repeat the flowery, just lovely way that he describes it. But it was no longer this maggoty raw meat. It was pure consciousness. Because he moved down through the veil of form into the essential Shakti that is what we're all really made of. And as we get that, the whole notion of pure and impure, it just kind of burns up. Because it's all energy. That's all it is. It's energy. And I'm not suggesting that any of us go out in search of maggoty meat and try eating it. But it's not a bad internal practice to imagine taking in the rotten, yucky, impure, lucky stuff and allowing it to be neutralized inside of you and holding that neutralized luminosity and sending it back out. This is the Tonglen practice in Tibetan Buddhism. We do it a little differently here, but it's a practice that turns the notion of purity up on its head. You know, because we're so caught up in those kleshas, and we have so much desire for purity and aversion to that which is not pure. When we get caught up in that stuff, we're on that seesaw, the play of opposites. So in cultivating purity and cultivating this niyama of shocha, keep searching into yourself for the experience of wonder. Keep searching into yourself for the experience of innocence. That just lovely new sense of innocence, which is so much of the heart. And feel that and find that and know that. Revere that. And look for it throughout the day. If you find yourself in some kind of a contracted, split apart, dissociated kind of in your head, clomping around, caught in some story of poor me, just like stop. And say, okay, wait, where's the innocence? Where's that newness? Where's the freshness? Where's the essence of this moment? That, in my opinion, is how we cultivate true purity. Because that's purity of heart, that's purity of mind, that's purity of spirit. And the body just goes along. This is what people don't understand. The body is just a servant. It goes where it's told to go. What happens is there's such a weird imbalance within the whole mind-body system that the body sometimes has a way of running away with us, just sort of taking us on a ride. But that's upside down. It's like the more we cultivate that anchoring presence, and if we're talking about this niyama of purity, the more we cultivate that, the body comes along. Because the body actually prefers feeling good. It likes to feel good. It really does. So cultivate innocence within your heart, however you can, whenever you can, whenever you remember. It's all of a piece. It's all the same thing. It's all when we enter into the newness of the present moment. Everything is new, right? Everything is new in the present moment because it just happened. And then here's another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, you know, and that's what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is beginner's mind, every moment. It's such a beautiful thing. So these niyamas, they're very, very lovely. They're very, very helpful, each and every one. Very, very, very lovely. And for this week, maybe the next couple of weeks, let yourself just hang out with this one, with purity or simplicity. It's sometimes translated shocha. It's kind of a funny word. Simplicity is nice too. I almost like it better than purity, not quite as loaded. So remember, it's a mind that keeps remembering to love that allows this notion of purity or simplicity to infuse our entire being. Right? That's what it comes down to. At the end of the day, it all comes down to love. Very simple. Love oneself, and the world becomes beautiful. Right? Love oneself, and everything becomes easy. Love oneself, and the impulse to be harmful to oneself goes away. This is what these yamas and niyamas are really about. They're about doing no harm to oneself. And in that process, it becomes impossible to do harm to anyone else, right? It always starts right here.